And good morning. It's Monday, January 11th. You're listening to KGNU's Morning Magazine. I'm Roz Brown. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio.
The oath that I took this past Sunday to defend and support the Constitution makes it necessary for me to object to this travesty.
Lauren Boebert and Doug Lamborn are fanning the flames of insurrection and alternative realities and lies. They need to go.
You know, the virus significantly impacted lawmaking in 2020.
If the vice president and cabinet do not invoke the 25th Amendment to remove him from office immediately, then my colleagues and I are ready to move forward with impeaching him on Monday.
Yes. Those are some of the voices you'll hear on today's magazine. Coming up this morning, numerous rallies in Colorado over the weekend in response to last Wednesday's attack on the nation's capital, not only calling for President Donald Trump to be removed from office, but also demanding the resignation of two members of Congress from Colorado who objected to the results of the 2020 presidential election. More on that coming up. Then the Colorado legislature begins its 2021 session in limited fashion this week due to COVID-19. We'll check in with political reporter Sandra Fish about what we can expect this year. Jim Hightower is here at the bottom of the hour for a new 2021 commentary. Then at 8:30 on this morning's public affairs program, Lafayette is known for its Peach Festival and recreational opportunities around Wanaka Lake. But its history is far more complicated. We'll hear from Doug Conroe, a journalist and the author of a new book called Lost Lafayette. Also stay tuned at 9 o'clock for Counterspin, a weekly look at fairness and accuracy in reporting, and at 9:30 for another morning of eclectic music until noon today here at KGNU. But first, a look at headlines this morning with KGNU's Jamie Sudler.
In Denver yesterday, protesters took to the streets in their cars demanding that President Donald Trump be removed from office. The protest was organized by Denver School Board member Tay Anderson in response to the riots after a Trump rally in the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday that killed five people. Protesters drove through Denver Sunday to the state capitol, honking horns and waving signs. We'll have more on the rally after headlines. The city of Denver is experiencing an uptick in COVID-19 cases, which is likely related to the holidays. Denverite reports that infection rates were on the steady decline in the city after reaching record highs last fall. But last Tuesday, over 1,000 new cases were recorded in Denver, while the previous day saw less than 200. That was the same day Governor Jared Polis eased restrictions on restaurants, allowing them to reopen on a limited basis. During a press conference on Friday, Polis said many people weren't tested over the holidays, so the new record set last Tuesday was probably an overcorrection once people finished their end-of-year celebrations. However, Denver's positivity rate, the ratio of tests taken compared to tests that came back positive, grew in the last week, which means the spike is about more than people rushing to get tested. Boulder County on Sunday reported 95 new coronavirus cases, but no new deaths. However, on Friday, the county reported an additional 14 COVID-19 deaths, according to county public health spokesperson Shauna Gusettis. In a notice, she said that 9 of those deaths involved residents of long-term care facilities that happened over the holidays. She added that the deaths were in the age ranges of their 50s to their 90s. Boulder County has extended the deadline for Denver Water to respond to questions and issues from agencies and individuals about the proposed expansion of Gross Reservoir Dam. Now, Denver Water has until February 19th after it wrote to Boulder County Planning saying that it had to catalog and organize the comments and had just completed an initial review. The Daily Camera reports that the Gross Reservoir expansion project would, among other things, increase the reservoir's current capacity and, if approved, would be the biggest construction project in Boulder County history. The project has been contested by residents and environmental advocacy groups. Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser has opened a grand jury investigation into the death of Elijah McClain. Weiser's office announced the investigation on Friday, about 6 months after he was appointed by Governor Jared Polis as a special prosecutor to review McClain's death. In a statement, Weiser said that the grand jury is an investigative tool that has the power to compel testimony from witnesses and require production of documents and other relevant information that would otherwise be unavailable. The Colorado Sun reports that McClain, 23 years old, died after he was stopped by Aurora police officers responding to a report of a suspicious person in 2019. An altercation ensued, and responding a paramedic gave the injection of ketamine, a powerful tranquilizer drug, to McClain. Dave Young, the district attorney for Adams and Broomfield counties, had reviewed McLean's death and determined not to file charges against police officers and paramedics involved in the encounter with McLean. Governor Polis appointed Weiser to review the case following the killing of George Floyd in Minnesota, which put a national spotlight on McLean's death. An overhaul of the state's unemployment system was completed yesterday, but the new system is not ready to handle the extended federal jobless payments for gig workers and those who've exhausted state benefits. The Colorado Sun reports that getting the system ready for the new federal benefits will take more time, and state officials said the latest date for that could be sometime in early February. Nearly 30,000 out-of-work Coloradans requested an unemployment payment on the state's upgraded computer system Sunday evening. The new system was available only to people on a regular unemployment or those whose employers paid into the state's unemployment insurance fund. The new computer system has been years in the making. The state was in the middle of a planned technology upgrade scheduled for April when the pandemic hit, putting the overhaul on hold. Democratic state lawmakers in Colorado are planning to introduce at least three pieces of gun control legislation this year, including a measure that would require a waiting period of potentially 5 days between when someone purchases a firearm and when they can access the weapon. The Colorado Sun reports that two other bills would require gun owners to safely store their weapons and to report to authorities if one of their firearms is lost or stolen. Other gun control policies put forth by Colorado Democrats in the past decade have been focused on mass shootings. The bills this year are mainly aimed at reducing accidental shootings and suicides, according to the sponsors of the measures. The National Weather Service forecasts that the next 3 days will have sunny skies. The high today, 46, 53 Tuesday, and 58 Wednesday. Right now, it's about 14 in Boulder, 21 in Denver, and 9 in Fort Collins. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
It's 8:11. From Pueblo to Durango to Grand Junction and finally Denver, there were rallies across Colorado over the weekend calling for the removal of President Donald Trump from office and the resignation of Colorado's newest 3rd District Congressional Representative Lauren Boebert, as well as 5th District Representative Doug Lamborn. Ian Silvery is the executive director of Progress Now Colorado, a group gathering signatures on a letter and circulating a petition that demands the representatives resign. He says the group is calling particular attention to Boebert's behavior.
In her first week of office, the week she took her oath of office to defend the United States from enemies foreign and domestic, she incited a riot and joined President Trump in attempting to literally overthrow the government.
Minutes before the attempted coup at the nation's capital last Wednesday, Boebert delivered remarks on the House floor and objected to election results from the state of Arizona. Here's Boebert.
The oath that I took this past Sunday to defend and support the Constitution makes it necessary for me to object to this travesty. Madam Speaker, I have constituents outside this building right now. I promised my voters to be their voice. And as their representative, I am sent here to represent them. I will not allow the people to be ignored. The members who stand here today and accept the results of this concentrated, coordinated, partisan effort by Democrats, where every fraudulent vote cancels out the vote of an honest America, has sided with the extremist left. The United States Congress needs to make an informed decision, and that starts with this objection.
Silvery says while some lawmakers struck a different tone after last Wednesday's events, Boebert has doubled down.
And now this week, she continues the inflammatory rhetoric. Yesterday, she tweeted, "Hillary must be pissed. It took the DNC until 2020 to successfully rig an election." These are the things that she's talking about right now. She's not talking about safety and security. She's not talking about uniting the country. She's putting that task at the feet of Joe Biden and Democrats. Yet she is the one who is supporting people and encouraging people who are chanting things like "Hang Mike Pence," who are putting nooses and gallows up in front of the United States Capitol. She's got to go.
Silvery believes there are huge similarities between Boebert and the president.
The thing with Trump and the thing with Boebert is the same. They're not there to make policy. They're not there to make people's lives better. They're there to perform. They're there to act, right? This is performative partisan politics. The coin of the realm is likes and retweets and attention. This week, remember, this is the same week she put out an ad talking about illegally carrying a pistol in Washington, D.C. That was seen by millions and millions of people in order to raise money. Meanwhile, when she said in the ad, "You're safe with me," right? Because she's packing a pistol. Meanwhile, when the House of Representatives was stormed, who was the one actually helping protect members of Congress? Jason Crow. Lauren Boebert was nowhere to be found.
In addition to senators and legislators, Silvery says both Boulder and Denver City Council members have signed the letter calling for the resignations. Silvery says the letter and petition are critical to demand accountability, but he's not confident of success.
Am I under any illusion that Lauren Boebert is going to bend to the pressure from constituents in Colorado and resign the job she got less than a week ago? No, I don't think she's actually going to go. But that doesn't mean that we're not going to keep demanding it. That doesn't mean that it's not the right thing for her to do. That doesn't mean that we're not going to keep shouting it from every single rooftop that this person is unfit to hold office. I know there are plenty of conservatives in Colorado and across the country, polls are showing this, that who are horrified by the events that occurred this week, by the attempted overthrow of the government and the attempted stealing of the election from Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. I know that there are tons and tons and tons of Republicans out there. The circle of people who are sticking with Trump and Boebert is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. But we need to have an investigation into what happened, into who was radicalized by whom, into what the president said, into what the president did, and to what people like Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley and Lauren Boebert did to contribute to the madness that led to the deaths of five Americans. Lauren Boebert, somebody who used to talk about Benghazi an awful lot. Four Americans were killed in Benghazi. Five Americans were killed in the D.C. Capitol occupation last week. Are these lives not as valuable as one another? I think that they are.
Again, that was Ian Silvery. He's the executive director of Progress Now Colorado, where the petition is located. Yesterday, Denver was the site of a Remove Trump Now car rally and car parade. Democratic elected leaders and members of the public gathered at South High School, and KGNU's Dave Ashton was there.
Denver Public Schools Director Tay Anderson hosted, while elected officials like Attorney General Phil Weiser and State Representative Leslie Sherrod voiced their strong support for President Trump's removal from office after Wednesday's violent insurgency at the nation's capital. Most rally participants remained in their vehicles and tuned in the speakers on Director Anderson's Facebook live stream.
So I bring you greetings from Congresswoman Diana DeGette, who says, "I want to thank you for the invitation to speak this morning. I wish I could be there with you all for this important event, but I had to stay in Washington, D.C., where she is currently working with several of her colleagues to impeach President Donald Trump for a second time." "And ultimately remove him from office immediately. What took place in our nation's capital this week was not a protest, it was an insurrection. The President of the United States, standing blocks away from the U.S. Capitol, urged his supporters to lay siege on the building and try to stop us from certifying the election for his opponent. He attempted to bring down our government because he lost an election. There should be no place in our society with such violence, and none of us as Americans should be willing to tolerate this behavior from our president." "President Trump once again has shown he is a real danger to this country and unfit to lead. If the vice president and cabinet do not invoke the 25th Amendment to remove him from office immediately, then my colleagues and I are ready to move forward with impeaching him on Monday." Yes. "Now we are going to go virtually to Representative Joe Salazar."
"I'm going back to 2015, when Donald Trump started his demonization of Mexicans, of blacks, of Muslims, of indigenous people, Asians, women, homeless, non-Christians, LGBTQ, disabled, the Jewish community. This was a Nazi-level denunciation of our neighbors, of our family members, and a large number of white Americans understood his language. He told us who he was, and black, brown, indigenous America believed him. Our congressional delegation encouraged him, excused him, stayed silent, or tried to give him the benefit of the doubt. People like Ken Buck and Doug Lamborn, Scott Tipton and Cory Gardner. And yes, we even had members of our own delegation trying to excuse his behavior, like Michael Bennett, when Michael Bennett said that he felt that Donald Trump's racism could be rehabilitated. We knew what was in his heart because he was saying it. And when a person says it, you believe him.
My name's Wendy Howell. I'm the state director of the Colorado Working Families Party. We are also the anchor of the Democracy Defense Coalition here in the great state of Colorado. And we have been working overtime after the election to protect our democracy. And we have seen unprecedented assaults on our democracy, not just this week, but leading up to it. Because let us all be clear. There were things that led up to Wednesday. There were lots of things that led up to Wednesday. Not least of all is the President of the United States refusing to accept a peaceful transfer of power. We have seen all this week and leading up to it, traitors wrap themselves in the flag and say, this is 1776, in an attempt to overturn peaceful election results in America. That is sedition. That is not, those are not patriots. Those are people who are seeking to undermine and overturn democracy in America for the cult of personality of one man. And there is a word for that, and it is not democracy, and it is not patriotism. We also see in this country, and we know, that we have a long, long history of white supremacy and white nationalism. And we see that in play this week, because in truth, it was white supremacists and white nationalists who rose up. They were offended that black people and brown people had votes. They attempted to draw this line between legal votes and illegal votes. And guess who the illegal votes were? And we see that they have spread these lies, including two of our own Congress members, Boebert and Lamborn, to the point that they were willing to sign on and vote for an effort to overturn the will of the people in this election. You, sir, and you, madam, are not patriots, and you must leave office.
This is democracy.
As hundreds of vehicles rolled out to commence the Remove Trump Now car rally and car parade, organizers urged them to remain tightly together, crawling in a line at 5 miles per hour from Denver South High School down I-25 to head northbound on Lincoln Street past the state capitol across town to Manual High School. Similar actions happened this weekend nationwide, calling for the removal of the 45th President of the United States from office and full force of law brought to those who enabled last Wednesday's mob violence. For KGNU, I'm Dave Ashton.
And at 3 o'clock this afternoon, KGNU's Miriam Schiff and her guests will discuss the difference between last Wednesday's response to white terrorists at the nation's capital and the response to Black Lives Matter protesters. Here's a preview.
It's time to continue and continue again a conversation to include what we have witnessed and to talk about the understanding that what would happen if Black Lives made up the chaos that we saw in Washington.
It was like I was watching an episode of The Twilight Zone. I was humored by the fact that there's nothing more poignant and telling than actually being able to observe American hypocrisy on primetime television.
Again, join Miriam Schiff this afternoon at 3 o'clock for Metro. You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. The 2021 Colorado legislative session was scheduled to start this Wednesday, January 13th, but it's been announced that the full return won't happen until at least mid-February due to the coronavirus pandemic. The five-week delay means the General Assembly will gavel in on Wednesday and then return on Tuesday, February 16th.
Political reporter Sandra Fish joins us this morning to tell us what this year's session might look like.
I think that it's likely that lawmakers are going to be around for 3 days this week and then take a break. What they're going to do is new members will be sworn in. There are at least 15 new House members, including Democrats Judy Emabile from Boulder, taking the seat of former House Speaker Casey Becker, Karen McCormick, Teresa Burnett of Longmont, and former Erie Mayor Dan Wu, the Republican. And there are 7 new senators, 4 of whom recently served in the House, including Longmont Democrat Sonia Jaquez-Lewis. They're going to swear those people in, and then they have some loose ends to take up, likely non-controversial minor measures like cleaning up past laws. Those things take at least 3 days, because that's the minimum for any legislation to pass. So I'd expect them to convene Wednesday, swear new people in, introduce the legislation that must be done now, and work that through. It's also possible that there will be lawmakers participating remotely like they did in December's special session, because there are members with health issues or otherwise at risk because of coronavirus.
All right, that's really helpful. So let's backtrack a bit. How much was lawmaking by legislators in 2020 affected by the virus? What are your observations on that?
You know, the virus significantly impacted lawmaking in 2020. It changed the focus. It hit in the middle of March, early March. Lawmakers adjourned for practically 2 months, and they returned to a very different landscape where tens of hundreds of thousands of people were unemployed. Suddenly, businesses had been shut down. And you also had the protests surrounding the death of George Floyd at the hands of police in Minneapolis in late May. And so it just totally changed the focus. Democrats abandoned their controversial plans like the public option health insurance program and paid family leave. Although paid family leave, they put that on the ballot and voters approved it in November. Other legislation also went by the wayside. And instead, when they came back in late May, they focused on health and economic issues resulting from the pandemic. They also did a pretty sweeping law enforcement reform bill aimed at preventing incidences like the death of George Floyd or Breonna Taylor. So it had a big impact. There were a lot of things that maybe didn't get done that might have gotten done in a normal year. And I think it changes the focus this year, too.
Well, much like the nation, Colorado now has a Democratic governor, Democratic control of both the Senate and House. And you've been a political reporter for many years. How is that different than when there's a mix of control of Republicans and Democrats?
You know, a lot of times when there's divided control, it tempers controversy, what some people might consider controversial legislation, and slows down the process. An example is the oil and gas regulations would never have been passed if the GOP had held the Senate in 2018. You know, this will be the third straight year that Democratic Governor Jared Polis is working with Democratic majorities in the state House and Senate. The majority in the House is pretty significant, and Senate Democrats picked up a seat in 2020. This is not that unusual. Republican Governor Bill Owens at the turn of the century worked with GOP lawmakers in power for 4 of his 8 years. And Democratic Governor Bill Ritter had a Democratic-controlled legislature all 4 of his years in office. Governor John Hickenlooper had Democratic legislative majorities only 2 of his 8 years, and that was probably okay with him. He opposed some of the efforts others in his party advocated, including the repeal of the death penalty. When Democrats took total control in 2019, there was a lot they wanted to do. And they did repeal the death penalty, even though it took 2 years. They enacted those tougher regulations on oil and gas development. There's now full-day kindergarten, one of Polis's top priorities, and the legislature recommended a nicotine tax increase that voters approved in January, just this month, and it will ultimately pay for full-day preschool.
Do you think a lot more of that kind of legislation might have been attempted, but the pandemic, but for COVID-19 hitting the state?
I think that there are some other things that Democrats want to get done. Will people talk about that public health insurance option that would be more of a state-run pool? I think that that will come up again, and it will be controversial. It might even be controversial with Republicans. But I really think that the focus is going to be on legislation that addresses the pandemic and employment and health care. Governor Polis has really, he has been in the controlling role in addressing the pandemic because the legislature doesn't meet year-round. And even though they did a special session in December, it'll be interesting to see. That was like an emergency event. It'll be interesting to see whether lawmakers propose ways to even share control over situations like this with the governor. You know, Republicans would certainly like to see the governor have less control and have the legislature more involved. And I don't know what that would look like, but we'll see when they're going to come in and do some emergency things for 3 days later this week, and then they're going to take a break and come back in mid-February. It means that the session will extend into June, probably sometime. So we'll see what happens next.
So maybe some of that rhetoric or hot-headedness that we might have seen has been a little tempered because of the massive problems to deal with due to COVID-19.
It certainly changes the focus. I mean, the budget is a big deal. And the Colorado Sun recently reported that lawmakers are thinking about a fee on gasoline, not a tax that would have to be approved by voters, but a fee that would get more money into transportation. One thing I would like to say is we had record voter turnout here in 2020, but things don't end just because you voted. And it's important for people to pay attention to what's going on at the Capitol because these things impact your daily lives. Things like health insurance, family leave, that sort of thing, all those things impact you. If a fee is passed to raise gas prices for a little while, that impacts people. And I think it's important for people to stay tuned to their local or statewide news outlet. Colorado has some great journalists working at the Capitol, keeping track of the big news every day. And you can do your own research online at ledge.colorado.gov. And you can get contact for your state lawmakers to let them know what you think about the issues that concern you. And it's really important for people to pay attention to what's going on, especially on issues that are important to them.
Again, that was Colorado political reporter Sandra Fish.